planet to live righteously. Time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode number 342, and if you have read the August edition of the Ensign, or Ensign, don't worry, both are correct. You can read that in the front cover of the Ensign so that it will settle your family's arguments. I digress. We've got Sierra Hewlett, who has... Sierra Hewlett. We had a conversation before I turned the microphones on about how within the moment, I've talked to Sierra probably, hundreds of times.
Probably.
Are we in the hundreds yet?
I don't know. I'm not sure yet.
She occupies the cubicle right next to mine at the day job. And I told her I will botch it as we go into it. So I'm glad
and
I did.
Did.
That. You have an article that you have written for The Ensign. It's called I Am Worth Fighting For, Overcoming My Eating Disorder. And I actually saw this online before you pointed it out. That you were like, hey, I was the author. I saw that some people had shared it. And I know it's something that is continuously circulating within, you know, the social medias, the groups and such for the church. Before we get into your article about your eating disorder, I want to talk a little bit about you. Tell me who you are.
Who I am?
Yeah.
I'm a journalist.
Okay.
I work for a radio station with you.
Yes.
And
what's the hopes and dreams as far as that goes?
Honestly, right now I'm not sure. I did TV news in school and I really like TV news and I miss the video aspect, but I really just love informing people. So I want to stay in news for sure. I think there's something really powerful about giving people information and, you know, and empowering them with truth and with facts and what's going on in the world. So for sure in news, I love storytelling. I love theater. I want to get back into theater again, musical theater, but I'm not sure where my path is going to take me.
Are you Utah born?
Yes.
Whereabouts?
Payson.
Okay. So small town Utah. Lifelong member of the church.
Yep.
And got into the BYU, and being from Utah County, that's commendable. That's not as easy as some may think.
Yeah, I went to Southern Utah University first.
Heard of it. Also attended it, but heard of it as well.
They have a really good musical theater program. So I went down there, changed my mind about what I wanted to study, and then I came to BYU, transferred.
What changed your mind about wanting to study that?
I love theater, and there's always going to be a hole in my heart that I can't fill with anything else. But I think I got back from my mission, and I think
where'd you serve?
Anaheim, California.
Okay.
Spanish.
Jeez, that's nice.
I missed the seasons.
Yeah.
I'm not a Southern California girl.
It's constantly mild here.
Right. Yep. I got back from my mission and I just realized that that's a really difficult career to go into, mm-hmm. and not something that's super steady. And I realized that I could use my storytelling talents and skills in another capacity as well. And so I chose journalism, which really isn't as much better pay-wise or steadiness-wise than theater is, but here
we
are.
They're always willing to let you work. It's just for how much you're going to get paid,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. So you decided to write this article for The Ensign, I presume, or did they come to you? Talk to me about how this...
So they actually came to me.
How did they know you had an eating disorder?
So what happened was, one of my roommates in school, in college, she knew everything that was going on with me and had happened to me, and she worked at church publications and or some department within nearby, and somebody had been talking about it, saying that they were looking for someone that had an eating disorder to write an article about it. And so then she reached out to me and she said, hey, would you want to write an article? And I said, sure. So that's kind of how it went down.
Okay, so let's dive into it.
Okay.
So I'll let you tell the story however you are, and then I'll just ask questions. And if there's ever anything that I ask that you're like, I don't really want to talk about it, just be like, I appreciate that question, but we're going to go ahead and move on. So an eating disorder, tell us about when that kind of first occurred and how you knew it was an eating disorder.
Yeah. Well, to start off, I mean, I think that growing up, I'd always felt the cultural pressure to be a certain body, you know, size.
You're saying
image.
The society on a mainstream or within the church?
Mainstream. And then also some family a little bit too. And then when I went on my mission, and I guess this would be more church culture. Everyone talks about how, oh, if you're going stateside on your mission, like you're going to gain a ton of weight.
Yeah.
And especially Spanish speaking. Oh, those Hispanics, they'll give you all that those tortillas and beans. And, mm-hmm. you know, like, and I was like, oh, no. And I was already worried about weight, you know, and already thinking about that. And so I was like, oh, you know, I can't let that happen, you know. And so I became very determined that I decided I was going to be very strict with what I ate, and so that I wouldn't gain weight. And so I actually ended up losing a lot of weight on my mission. I'm not going to drop numbers because numbers are bad for people with eating disorders.
Sure,
very
sure,
triggering.
Sure.
So I ended up losing quite a bit of weight, and because I would just eat very little during the day with the what I could eat, and like super healthy, well, healthy in quotations, and then when we ate dinners with members, and I would just eat what they gave me, but I would eat as little as I possibly could.
Okay.
So I would never eat any tortillas, because usually tortillas were on the side, and then I would always compare what I ate to my companion. And I wrote in my article that it became kind of a competition in my head between me and my companion to see who could eat the least.
Oh, interesting.
Which is ridiculous, because obviously they didn't know it was a competition.
Yeah, it's a competition of one, and so of course you're going to win.
Yeah, yeah.
It's in other forms, it might be a great form of competition if you're like, listen, I'm competing against everyone else, but they don't know we're competing. But in this one, probably not so great.
Yeah. And at one point, I had a companion tell me that she thought I was anorexic, and I was very not happy with that and upset. And I was like, I am not anorexic. I am just trying to be healthy. And like, and you know, I've lost weight, but it's good. Like, this is good weight loss, you know? And I was like, oh, I just need to lose, you know, X number of more pounds. And I'm just like, that's when I'll be done and I'm good. Cause that's what I've always, the weight I've always wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, yeah, I'm going to tell the mission president. And I was like, oh, I'm totally fine. And anyway,
did it consist of arguments like, what do you want me to eat? I'll eat this. I'll eat this right now to prove it to you.
No, she actually only brought it up once.
Really?
And never said anything about it again. But I remember being like, how dare you? Like, I'm totally fine, you know? But looking back, I do think I was displaying anorexic behaviors. Because, and this is a common misconception, I think, that a lot of people think that anorexia is that you're eating like a mint for one meal, right, and that's it.
I just had
whole
water
day
with lemon. Ugh, I'm so full.
Yeah,
like that kind of thing.
But really, anorexia is just restricting. That's what anorexia is when you're restricting your eating and when you're hungry, you know? And that's what I was doing. And then there was no compensation. So with anorexia, it's that you're not you know, binging or anything like that to compensate, which would turn into more of like bulimia or binge eating mm-hmm. disorder. Anyway, so I do think I was somewhat anorexic at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I lost a ton of weight. I got home, I was very thin. I was unhealthily thin.
Family concerned when they saw you?
No. That was actually
So they just reaffirm what your mind was telling
you. Yes. And like I said, I think I have some family. I don't want to point out any. Well, I don't know. I guess my mom will never listen to this. But a lot of it, I think, was my mom. And
Which I'm sure that if we talked to her, she would say, listen, I wanted my daughter to be healthy. I wanted her to, what she probably deemed
yes.
to look her
yes.
air quote
and that's
best.
Why I,
so it's not
I,
like she's like, I want to give you a malicious complex that will make you not only feel bad about yourself, but also hurt your body in some way. I'm sure that's not your mom.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's why I hesitate to, you know, point that out, because I do think that she does want the best for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she does want me to be healthy. And she knew that I'd wanted to lose weight, you know. And so, like, to her, it was like, oh, yeah, like, good for you.
That's my daughter,
you know,
getting her goals just
yeah.
like she said she wanted
yeah.
to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, but I think that she displayed some disordered patterns of behavior and thoughts and comments that she would make. That looking back, at the time I didn't realize were bad, but looking back I can see how that might have influenced me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, she just, like, they all, like, my family all thought I was really thin, but none of them were concerned.
Right.
I felt there may have been some concern behind closed doors, but not to my face.
It seems like in all these stories, though, that at some point it must have come to a head, right? There must have been either the rock bottom or the you know, health scare or the something that drove the change. Is that what
happened? And well, what actually happened was that wasn't the bad part. So my body just retaliated after I got home, and I started binging and getting these like super strong urges to binge, which freaked me out because at this point my worst fear in the world was gaining back this weight that I'd lost. Mm-hmm. And so I'd start to binge, and then so then I'd restrict to make up for it. So it started turning into more of like a binge eating disorder. And so that would freak me out, which would make me, you know, do more extremes, you know.
You got to get better control of it. So I guess you'll be more restrictive.
And I always felt was like control. That was a big thing that I just wanted control. Mm-hmm. And then there were some other things going on in my life at the time. My parents separated and they were pretty close to divorce, and my brother was struggling, and I was struggling not just with that, but also I went back to Southern Utah University where my best friend had gone to my freshman year. My best friend was with me and she had transferred schools. Mm-hmm. And so I was there alone, and all the people that I had started the program with had moved on, you know, and they were in different classes than me. So I just felt super alone, and I felt awkward and weird still from my mission. And I think my personality changed a lot on my mission. I became super quiet and like introverted, which is not me at all.
Interesting.
And I think some of it may have had to do with the eating disordered behaviors I was displaying. I don't know. And just also just the mission is just such a strange.
Yeah, it is a whole different world. If people listening that are like, yeah, how different can it be? You're just in a different country. I mean, it really is.
Well, even here in the United States, it's just so different.
Yeah.
And so I think because of the way things that were going on in my life at the time, and also, you know, the eating disorder issues I was experiencing just kept me in that weird personality state. And so it was just kind of all these different things. And then it started to get worse and worse to the point where I was just obsessive about my body and what I was eating and counting calories and exercising. I was never an excessive exerciser, but I did exercise every day, and I felt super, super weird if I ate and I hadn't exercised. Like, I felt just gross. Like, I. But it just became so obsessive, and like that was like all I could think about, like 90% of my thoughts, and I'm not even exaggerating, probably 90% of my thoughts were about food and my body. And that was it. And like, I have no idea how I did school. I still got really good grades, and I think that I just became laser focused on that. Like, I transferred to BYU, and I was still doing this. And it's funny because my roommates, talking to them now, they were like, yeah, we had no idea that there was anything wrong. We just thought that you were just like this hyper-focused, serious person who's just like, I'm doing school and I'm going to get my homework done. And I'm going to go to bed like by 10 every night, you know, and get up at 6 and go run, you know. And that's all they thought I did was homework and running. Like, So it just became like super really bad, and I realized that there was something wrong, but I think I didn't know it was an eating disorder, because I didn't know, well, like, I feel like what we're taught, at least for me, is that an eating disorder is, you know, in school they show you this picture of someone who's super, super skinny, you can see all their bones, and they're like, don't do that, you know, or they're like, oh, people who with eating disorders, you know, they'll you know, make themselves throw up. Don't do that.
Right. And that's the end. If you don't do those things, then you're fine.
Yeah. And it's like, it's a choice.
Right.
And I hadn't chosen this, you know, like, I didn't choose this. And I just didn't know that that's what it was. I didn't know it was a mental illness. I didn't know that. And so it took me a long time to realize that was what it was. Mm. And finally I started, well, and it was funny too. I remember at one time thinking that I had an addiction to food. I was like, that's my problem.
That's what it is.
I'm addicted to food. But like, I just like didn't even know. Anyway, so I went to a counselor at BYU and this was still in my I'm addicted to food phase. And I was just like, there's something wrong. That counselor was not helpful. So I stopped going after a few times. But then later on, like over time, I don't know when the moment was, but I finally realized, I was like, maybe I have an eating disorder and that's what this is. Mm. And so
I want to take a break real quick.
Take a break.
And I want to come back, and we come back in the second block of the Cultural Hall. I want to talk about once it has then come to your mind, hey, this may be an eating disorder, what you do about it. And where you went from there, and then where we get to the article that we can all read today.
Yes.
You can find that in association with this episode at theculturalhall.com. We'll take a break and be back in just a second.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Dan the Laptop Man here, and it's time for another PC Laptop's Bedtime Story. Once upon a time, Brian was looking for a new computer. He searched far and wide from north to south, and he even took his quest online. But he had yet to find the PC of his dreams and was feeling sad. If only I could find the perfect computer with a lifetime warranty to match, he thought to himself. But then Brian stumbled upon a magical store with a friendly staff and a selection galore. Inside, he knew he had found what he'd been searching for all along, a blazing fast PC with a lifetime warranty his heart had desired. Brian returned home, his new PC laptop's desktop in tow. And should it come time to upgrade, Brian knows where to go. PC Laptops, where we really do love Brian and you. PCLaptops.com.
I want to take a quick second and talk to you about Best DJ in Utah now in its second year. Last year, I went to Washington, to Roche Harbor, and did a gorgeous wedding. This year, I'm slated to go to Moab, to go to Denver to do weddings. And guys, it couldn't be going any better. Thanks in large part to folks like yourself, people who are listening to this and say, you know what, I need a wedding or a mobile DJ for something. And then reach out to me. You can go to bestdjinutah.com. You can find me on all of the social medias at Richie T. Stedman, or you can certainly just send me an email, Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E-T as in tough guy, Stedman, S-T-E-A-D-M-A-N @gmail.com. I would love to see what I could do to make your event that much better. Whether it's a party or the biggest day of your life, you need the best DJ in Utah. And like I said, it doesn't have to be in Utah. It can just be the best DJ in Utah. I don't know. Now we start to get into like the technical things. It's bestdjinutah.com.
The Cultural Hall wants you to help Utah Food Bank fight hunger statewide. Through your donations of food, time, or money, Utah Food Bank is able to distribute over 31 million meals annually to Utahns facing hunger. Even a $1 donation can be turned into $7.35 of goods and services. 1 in 5 children in Utah could go to bed hungry tonight, and 423,000 Utahns are unsure where their next meal will come from. By donating food at your local pantry or by visiting utahfoodbank.org, you can make a difference.
Here in the second block of the Cultural Hall, if you enjoy this and other interviews that we do here in the Cultural Hall, consider becoming a Patreon subscriber. It's becoming increasingly worth it. You can become a part of that secret, I'm sorry, I say this every time, not secret, sacred Facebook page where only those Patreon subscribers are allowed to be, and we talk about things. You get announcements before anyone else. For as little as just $1 a month gets you into that group, and that dollar group that's going away, spoiler alert, we're not going to make it available for just $1 for much longer. So if you've been sitting on the fence and saying, I don't know that I want to give him $1 a month or $12 a year, consider it, because then you might be considering a higher rate in the future. It's patreon.com/theculturalhall. Ciara, got it right that time.
Yes.
You come to the self-awareness, the self-realization that, okay, this is more than just, you know, you're in control, that kind of stuff. It's an eating disorder. So then what?
I actually had a turnaround moment when I talked. I actually do kind of remember, I think, more or less around the time when I realized it was an eating disorder. I actually had a friend that I mentioned in the article that I knew in high school, but I happened to meet her at Southern Utah University in the library randomly one day, and we became friends again. And well, we were acquaintances before, so we became friends. And then after I was at BYU, I decided to like actually tell her what was going on and talk to her. And she had actually had an eating disorder, a very similar kind like me. And
if you don't mind, what do you label yours? We've kind of talked around about a bunch of different things. Or do we not like labels? Is that like a thing within it?
I never got a specific, like I never had a doctor tell me like this is the kind of eating disorder that you have. But I would say kind of like a mild form of bulimia, because I did start to purge after I went, like we were talking about that binge cycle, binge restrict cycle. And then I did start to restrict. Purging can also just be, you know, other ways to compensate for binging. So exercise or restricting. But then I also did start to throw up to some extent, or vomit, or whatever word you want to
use. I like throwing up, but you can say vomit.
So I would say it was kind of morphed. Like I said, I think it kind of started with anorexia a little bit, and then went into more of like a binge eating disorder, and kind of turned into bulimia.
Right. So you talk to her and she says, hey, I had a similar thing. And
yes.
Then...
And she says she went to a therapist that really helped her. So I decided, and I actually had tried one other therapist before that. So I was up to two therapists at this point.
Third time's a charm.
So I went and tried this one, and she was super helpful, really loved her. She helped me a ton, and I was able to change a lot of my behaviors with her. And then I stopped going to her because it was expensive.
Right. Which is unfortunate that's why a lot of people stop getting the help they need, whether it's a therapist or even prescriptions, because of cost.
Yeah. And my parents were paying for it, which like kind of, I mean, for reasons I mentioned earlier, it was kind of hard for me to be having my parents pay for it when I kind of felt some conflict of this, you know what I mean? Of what I was meeting for and feeling like I had disagreement with my parents over it. And like for a long time, my dad, I think, didn't even believe me that I had an eating disorder.
Really?
He was just kind of like, everyone struggles with food. And I was like, I think he does now, but I still question it sometimes.
Yeah. You're like, P.S. Dad, maybe not like this, but...
And so that kind of created conflict, too, for me internally, that they were paying for it, because I couldn't pay for it. It's really expensive. So I stopped going, mostly over the money, I think, but then also just because I was like, I'm doing better.
Yeah, I got this.
You know, I got this. But the problem is that I hadn't addressed the underlying issues. Like, a lot of my behaviors had changed, but I was still thinking the same way a lot.
Right.
And my thoughts about food and my body had decreased significantly, but, like, I was still, you know, feeling negatively toward my body, still thinking a lot of things like, you know, this is good and this is bad food, and, you know, and feeling like I still needed to lose weight. And... Oh, I didn't mention that earlier. I did gain a lot of weight back when I started binging, which freaked me out. but it was all like healthy weight gain because, like I said, I was underweight, which at the time I was like...
Right, but you're not able to balance that. You're like, I was A weight, now I'm B weight.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So for a while, I just kind of like floated in between, and it was better. I mean, I didn't mention earlier, but my life had just... Like, I was just a ghost before. Like, I just, and this is another thing, too, that people with eating disorders socially isolate themselves.
Yeah, so you don't have to talk about it, so people don't see what you've got
going
on.
Yeah, and also, it's just like, you just feel so shameful all the time, and you just, you don't feel worthy as a human, you know? And I just felt like I was in hell, and... But over time, you know, that got better. But I was still feeling like some surrealism in my life. And but things were better. But like I said, I was just kind of floating along. And then I realized I think I still need some help. So I decided to try BYU counseling, give it another try. Mm-hmm. You know, my first time was not good. But this time I was smarter and I was like, I'm going to look for someone that specializes in eating disorders.
Awesome.
So I went through and I requested that person instead of getting a random person. And that was definitely like a godsend because she was exactly what I needed. She was amazing and just connected with me so well. And that's the thing about finding a therapist is it's so hard. You have to do a lot of trial and error to find the right person for you.
Yeah, people will say like shopping for a therapist, and it really is.
You have to try
them on,
is.
See if it fits. It can be frustrating and also very expensive. But
then when you find that right person, it's just like, it's a magical moment.
Yeah.
And so she was just the right person for me. And so I started going to her, and this is my last semester at BYU, and started going to her, and then I started going to group therapy too, a session that she ran, and that was super helpful. And so with her, I started to change some of the underlying behaviors and thoughts. And
where real change occurs.
Yeah. So like I'm a perfectionist and I have some anxiety, and I realized that those were issues. And we talked a lot about black and white thinking, which is a lot of what I was doing. And
which is what a lot of members of the church do as well.
I was just going to say that. Yes, I think that a lot of being raised in the church, especially in Utah, I was raised to think in black and white, you know, and so I had to address that. And I still struggle with this, like realizing that, that there's so much gray in life. In fact, most of life is gray, but
right.
I want it to be black and white. You know, I really do.
It'd be a lot easier.
Yeah, I want there to be right and wrong. And so my perfectionism can be satisfied, you know, but such is not life. And we talked a lot about, you know, just being a rebel. I love Star Wars. So just like, you know, you have to go against the cultural ideas and norms, and to just love yourself as you are is such a rebellious thing in our society.
Yeah.
To just be like, you know what? I don't care. Like, this is my body and I love my curves, and I'm going to, you know, not subscribe to that idea and that ideal, and I'm going to do me, you know, and I'm going to love me for me. And just being a rebel toward whatever anyone else says or does, you know, and just being like, no, I'm going to do this. So those are kind of a lot of the things that I had to work through. And I'm still working through. It's still a work in progress.
Are there days?
Are there days? Oh, there are definitely days. Yeah. I still struggle not to weigh myself. That's like a big challenge for me. Hmm.
Because that's such a trigger.
Well, yeah, like one of the first things I tell you when you go in therapy for eating disorders is like, stop weighing yourself, you know, but like for
see
me,
how you feel more than what a number
is. It's just a number and it really doesn't mean anything. It's the only reason why it means something is because we've put meaning to it, you know, but for me, it's a comfort almost, you know, like to see the number and feel like, okay, I'm doing okay, you know? And so it's like, even though I would say, quote unquote, I'm recovered, I mean, I think recovery is something I'm always going to be doing, you know? And something my therapist told me is that people who have eating disorders, there's just something in their brain that's just, you know, that gets triggered, you know, and then you get an eating disorder, because one person could be in the exact same circumstance and not get an eating disorder, and then another person can be in the same circumstance and get an eating disorder. And so I think there are things I'll always struggle with more than other people, you know, and I'm always going to be having to work through that. And one of those things, you know, is not putting my worth in a number on the scale, you know, but I still want it for some reason. You know, I have a really hard time getting over that. But
why is it important that the Ensign, important enough that the Ensign put an article about this in its latest issue?
I think it is so important. I said, it's actually kind of funny. I posted about it and the church asked me to post about it in their Facebook discussion group thing. And so I did, and I wrote that I felt like I wrote this because it's very misunderstood. Eating disorders are very misunderstood, and that it's still a taboo subject to some extent. And I had a lot of dissenters who said that I don't think it's a taboo subject. And what I would say to that is that people don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
It's a hard...
Makes them uncomfortable. They don't know what to say. They don't want to trigger you or be triggered or any of that stuff.
And so to me, that's what something taboo is. Mm-hmm. You don't talk about it. And then also something, what makes something taboo is that it's not culturally acceptable. And I think that eating disorders are still not culturally acceptable. Because for me, having one, I felt like I couldn't talk about it because I felt like I was going to be judged and misunderstood. Yep. And in many ways I was. And I think that people don't understand because, like I mentioned before, that I think we're not teaching it in the right way, you know, growing up in schools and things. And maybe some people do have good education. But for me, I didn't know it was a mental illness. Right. And I think most people don't. And the people that I've encountered, it's misunderstood. People do think that you choose it, that, oh, like, why don't you just stop? you know, just start eating.
Yeah.
Or don't eat so much and don't make yourself throw up.
Right.
Or stop worrying so much about your body.
Right.
Or like,
love yourself, girl.
Yeah. Or you're the one that wants to be thin, or you're the one that wants to be this ideal. So just, you know, you can just stop. And I'm like, no, no, that's not how this works. It's a mental illness. And at the end of the day, it's more about control than anything else. A lot of people that have eating disorders have anxiety or perfectionism and depression and other issues. And it's a way to control what's going on and to feel like, and I mentioned this in my article, like for me, I felt like it was a way for me to do something right, you know, or
I can't do all these things, but I can do this.
I can achieve this. I can control what my body looks like, and I can be perfect in that area, you know, or I don't know. And then, and you just, it gets to the point, like it just starts with something. It starts somehow, and a lot because of cultural influence. And then it just escalates, and you just can't control your brain. Like, it just is going crazy. Like I said, like 90% of my thoughts were about this. And I remember writing a poem when it was like during the worst about how it was just like this rattling in my brain and feeling like all the time, like I was waddling everywhere, and that like it was a weird poem, but like in food and like every like back and forth and back and forth. Anyway, and so I just think that it is a subject that just needs to be talked about. And if we can just talk about it more, then people will understand more how to talk to people with eating disorders. And it will become more comfortable for people with eating disorders to come out and talk about it, or even recognize that they have one. Like, I said, I didn't even know. And then I think just if we can start talking about it more, it'll become more comfortable and we'll be able to understand how to talk to people with eating disorders, and people with eating disorders will feel more comfortable coming out with it because they won't feel like people are going to judge them or say the wrong things, which so many people say so many wrong things to people with eating disorders. I have a long list of things that you should not say to someone with an eating disorder, but yeah.
So to someone that might be listening to this who does have an eating disorder, whether or not they, maybe some of the things that you said that they resonate with, maybe they haven't come to that point where they're like, oh, I do have an eating disorder, or maybe they're fully aware, to those individuals, man or woman, what would you say to them?
I would say that don't give up hope, number one, and that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and it can feel like there is nothing left living for, and that your whole world is crashing around you and you can't control anything, and that everything is slipping away, and it just feel like you're not even, you feel like you're out of your body, or, you know, and just kind of getting by day to day. And you might feel like I did, like you could never say that you had a good day again. But people do recover, and I am a living example of that.
Yep.
But it will feel like there's no way you can get over this. There's no way you could have normal thoughts again or eat normally ever again. But you can. And that's like the main thing. It's just like, please, please, please hold on to some hope and just reach out to people that are non-disordered, friends and family, and get a therapist that specializes in eating disorders.
That you connect with.
Yeah. Find one and don't give up hope if you go to one and it doesn't work, like keep trying, you know, and if you don't have the financial ability to go to a therapist, you know, just reach out to people around you and see if they can help you out. Or, you know, even if you're a member of the church, like you can go to your bishop and ask for help. But just get help, have hope. That's probably what I would say.
You haven't ever listened to an episode of The Cultural Hall. So first of all, shame on you. But second of all, we ask everyone who steps into The Cultural Hall 3 questions. So I'll ask those of you right now. First of all, do you have a calling right now? And if so, what is it?
I do. I am my ward choir director.
I was a ward choir recruiter for a while. I didn't have to actually go to choir. I just had to get people to go to choir.
I also just got called as a state choir director as well.
For like an upcoming state conference or just in general?
Yes.
Nice work.
Yes.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I actually really love my calling. I know people like have this, you know, stereotype of the ward choir that are like, oh, the ward choir, they're getting up again. Why? Like, please sit down.
Yeah.
You know, but I like actually like we sing hard songs and we do good work. So I really love it. Like I love music. But another calling. I don't know. I really don't know. I feel like the ward photographer and videographer. I could do that.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
And they need that, you know, for archival purposes.
That's
right. At the very least for the ward directory on LDS Tools, because so many of those don't have pictures.
Or I could be the documentary maker of our ward.
Yes.
And it'd be really funny and weird about all the people.
Sure.
Ooh, it'd be like an episode, like a documentary, The Office style.
Oh, perfect.
You know, great. So people just like comment on what other people are doing.
And just turn to the camera. Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah.
Yes.
I love it.
That's my calling right there.
The final question is of a little bit more serious nature.
Okay.
Interpret it however you will, but what is your favorite part of your faith?
It's an interesting question, Richie. Interestingly worded. Like when you say interpret it how I want, like my faith as in like my personal faith or like my faith as my religion.
That's what's so great about you get to interpret it. Just what's your favorite part of your faith?
Okay. Well, the first thing I thought of was my personal faith. So I'll go with that. I think I just really believe that we're all children of God. I mean, this is just a really simple concept, but I really believe that, and I think I really believe that everyone just should be loved, you know, and that one of the best things that we can do on this earth is just to love people unconditionally. And I think that stems from my faith that we're just children of God.
Maybe learn to live in the gray a little, huh?
And learn to live in the gray.
We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be